Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Former New York Governor Mario Cuomo has long been a vocal foe of Italian-American stereotyping. He refused to watch Francis Ford Coppola's award-winning film, The Godfather, for over 40 years and condemned hit shows about the mafia like The Sopranos. He said they reinforced an ugly stereotype that all organized crime is Italian. But Cuomo finally caved in this week and watched The Godfather. While he admitted it was a good film, he reaffirmed his belief that it delivers a horrible message, that stereotypes Italian-Americans. Speaking on the panel at Fordham University's Forum on Law, Culture, and Society this weekend, he said of filmmakers who portray the mafia as a means of entertainment, "You demean our system of law by saying if you don't want to get justice, you mow down the bums." What do you think? Does entertainment reinforce stereotypes in our society? And most important on this hour is, what's your stereotype story? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or check in at the Vox Pop at WAMC.org. Vox Pop at WAMC.org. Okay, so mine is, and we've already got one guy on the phone, and we'll be right with him. My story is that I remember being in high school, and I remember being called into the headmaster's office, who accused me of getting a 100 on the American History with World Backgrounds Regents exam by cheating. I looked at him in utter disbelief, and I said, "How did I do that?" And he said, "Well, you're Jewish, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, a Jewish school in faraway Brooklyn had been somebody had robbed the Regents exams out of their safe." And I said, "Yeah, well, what does that have to do with me?" And he said, "Well, you're Jewish." As if, you know, all Jews stood together, everybody would steal together, they would pass it around because we were all Jewish or all Catholic or whatever. I remember that one. It was really quite something. Okay, so that was mine. Let's go to Ralph in Saugerty. Okay, Ralph, you're on. Hey, Ralph. Is Ralph gone? He hung up? Okay. Well, Ralph is gone. And 1-800-348-2551. You know, folks, it's your show. The Vox Pop and the Vox Pop, the Vox Popular. The whole idea is that, you know, we all have stories. We all have shared experiences. We all know what the sting of prejudice may be. I mean, if you're black, if you're Hispanic, if you're Jewish, if you're, we all know that there is this ability to stereotype. Mario Cuomo, who I'll never forget it, he was on my show on the Capital Connection, and as you know, he did it every week. And at that point, there were a couple of reporters who were asking him questions. We changed the format later, maybe right after this, actually. And one of the reporters asked him something about the mafia, and he decided to give him a lesson, you know, in logic and how there was no mafia. Carried on. And it was very funny stuff. And the next day, the Daily News had a headline on it. And it all started here on WMC. The Daily News had a headline. Yes, Mario, there is a mafia. So we'll go back to Ralph and Saugerties, give him another chance. Okay, Ralph, you're on.
Okay.
You're on, Ralph.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hi, this is Ralph from Saugerties.
Got it.
I got a similar kind of you know, story. I went out to look with my family. I lived in Brooklyn, you know, with two kids and a wife, and go to a normal real estate broker on Long Island. And apparently the town in Long Island is divided into a Gentile section and a Jewish section, unbeknownst to me. And the woman who obviously wants to stay within the law, because I might be, you know, undercover or something, she had to find out for me what I was.
Interesting.
And my family.
Uh-huh.
So she had to come up with something that wasn't offensive, but that got right to the heart of it, and that could actually be pleasant. So it was around, Passover and Easter. So what did she say, you know, to my wife? She turned to my wife directly and said, real quick, So, do you have your ham ready for Easter Sunday? And what could she say?
What'd she say?
Well, she said, well, we don't usually eat ham on Easter Sunday, and just left it at that. And then, of course, she proceeded to take us to the... She said, well, I think we're in the wrong neighborhood.
How old are you, Ralph?
I'm sorry?
How old are you now?
I'm 62.
You think it's changed?
No, this was, 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I really don't think the cult, the consciousness on Long Island or the real estate, the neighborhoods are just like that, and they still are.
Mm-hmm. Ralph, thanks for the very interesting story. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for starting us off.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Malcolm in Sunderland. Okay, Malcolm in Sunderland, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
How do you do?
We're good. How do you do?
I'm doing rather well. My situation is this. First of all, I want to agree wholeheartedly that the media has a big effect on people and the influence of stereotypes on our minds, all of our minds. I live in Massachusetts. I encounter some what I call basically mild racism, a couple times a year, just perceivable stuff, maybe a little more. Most recently, we have a new landlord, a gentleman bought the set of apartments that I live in. And I was talking to one of the tenants, and she was making some comments. She was an older woman who apparently felt that there was a chance that we were going to be in a bad situation because the gentleman was Jewish and we were going to all be in trouble with our money and such. And I just basically winced. And
Wait, Malcolm. Who was Jewish? I'm sorry.
The gentleman who bought the apartment.
Okay.
And so she obviously had, that little bit of prejudice in her. She wasn't speaking, lots of bad terms or whatever, but she had that idea that, our money was going to be affected because he was going to come and, that was going to be an issue. So anyway, I do my best to, if I really can't change someone and win the good fight, it's kind of not always worth doing. So I said, well, have a good day, Mazel Tov, and, moved on. the next day I'm talking to this new landlord, and he was referring, very nice guy, no problem with him myself. I'm actually a non-practicing Jew, so... And so I'm talking to him outside, and he's mentioning that the new property manager, nice guy moving in, and his girlfriend happens to be Puerto Rican. But she's really well educated, he said.
always the but, yeah.
It's just amazing how, it's not the depth of the insidious, real nastiness. It's this other level of just kind of how they think of other people and just assume these little things about, how could she really, it's surprising that she's educated because she's Hispanic. But
Malcolm, my mother, who was, an educator on the west side of Manhattan, used to give out covers for books, book covers, and they always had a message on them. And one said, if anybody comes up to you and says anything, like that, you're supposed to tell them that they're un-American. I've always loved that. Yeah.
Yeah, and, I guess the real thing I wanted to comment on here is the social aspect is, I felt very, in both situations, I wanted to question deeply, why was it that I didn't speak up
Well,
more?
Yeah, no, that is the issue. That's always the issue.
Yeah, when I think about it in myself is in one case, first of all, they're both older to the point where I don't feel like I'm necessarily going to change their mind, and that in this case it wasn't so severe an infraction that it was worth necessarily getting into. And I think, maybe I need to work on that myself,
Malcolm, we all do. I have to tell you that we're talking to some people we like very much in Great Barrington, and they were both elderly women, and one turned around to the other and said, he got that for cheap. He Jewed him down. And the other lady looked at her and said, and she also, not Jewish, looked at her and said, we don't say that anymore.
Right. That's great. I'll take that as sound advice. That's a really good way to put it, too.
Hey, Malcolm, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan. Have a great day.
Hey, let's go to Oh, no. Let's take a short break. Then we'll go to Tony and Susan and Janice, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years. Now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. Lori Stilwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. And Henry's at the Farm Restaurant, Milton, located at Buttermilk Falls Inn, 4 miles south of the Mid-Hudson Bridge. Dinner Wednesday through Sunday, lunch Friday and Saturday, and Sunday brunch, Henry's at Buttermilk.com.
Nice act. You just, the music ended, and there I was again. You know, I have great hope that things do change. I think things do change. I remember my parents had a place on Fire Island when we were little kids. We got out there, and I do remember somebody yelling the K word at us. It was hurtful, but you got over it. By the time, years later, it would not have been thought of. So I think a lot of people do change, and I can only hope that. Let's go to Tony in Kingston. All right, Tony, you're on.
All right. Thanks.
Hey. You're there. It's
hey.
You.
Hi, Alan. Tony, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm looking forward to your story.
Yeah, I've been a chiropractor for 30 years now in the community. I love my work. It's an amazing thing to do, and I just wanted to talk for a moment about how challenging it is for me to face the way that many people treat what I do as something like a religious belief system. They either believe in it or they don't, rather than seeing me as a doctor of chiropractic,
sure,
who's licensed both state and federally, who's an expert witness in court, who's actually taking care of veterans now through the federal program. It's important to me that people understand the importance of caring for the health of their nervous system. I'm writing a book to really answer that call. It's all about having a user's guide for your body to be able to prevent injury and damage.
Okay.
Chiropractic is a part of it, but it's not the whole thing, because a lot of times people just don't know what to do to take care of their spinal structure through some very simple means that could help them prevent injury and live a longer life.
Okay, and moving on, Tony, I'm not trying to push you, but the story is?
Well, the story is, thank you, the story is that, I'm actually part of the healing arts system, but I'm outside of the medical arena, it's been a challenge to really be a full-out player. A lot of people see chiropractic as more marginalized because it's not referred to as much, and yet the research shows that manipulation and exercise routines are the treatment of choice for many back.
Okay, but is there a specific story about how people are prejudiced? Again, do you have a story?
Well, the story would be just a general story of, hearing from people that they don't believe in what I do. And that's the concern that I have. It's not something to believe in. It's like believing in dentistry or something. It's really about knowing the facts that this works. And if it didn't work, I wouldn't be licensed to do this, as a professional.
Okay. Hey, Tony, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
All right, very good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan.
Bye. Let's go to Susan in Hopewell. Susan in Hopewell, you're up.
Hi, Susan. Hi. I'd like to talk about the Washington Redskins name change topic, which I think is related to what you're discussing today.
Okay.
I was talking to my grandson yesterday. He's in a high school where the mascot is the Indians, and I was, discussing the Washington Redskins thing, and he said, well, our name is Indian too. What's wrong with that? And he really couldn't understand what was wrong with it until I said, well, what if your mascot of your school was the N-word? What would you think?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he understood it.
Interesting. Interesting.
That's the only point I had to make.
Well, it's a good point, and I thank you, Susan, and I agree with you. Thanks again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, let's go. I guess it's Janice in Woodstock. All right. Janice, you're up.
Hello.
Hello. Is that Janice?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you have to turn down your radio if you would. Thanks a lot, Janice, for calling. Go ahead. You're on.
Hi. When you opened the program with your story about the discrimination in your school and the accusation, I really resonated with that because of something that happened to me when I started school at New Paltz many years ago.
Uh-huh. At the college or the high school?
The New Paltz College.
Okay.
And the university, SUNY. And the professor did not like the idea that his top student in calculus was a black girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so he accused me of exactly the same thing, of having cheated on the exam, which is why I got the top grade. I think it was 100, but, you know, it could have been 90. It doesn't matter. But I got the top grade. And
but that stays with you for the rest of your life, doesn't it?
Not only does it stay with you for the rest of your life, but all of a sudden, I went to New Paltz, it started 50 years ago this month. So it's been a while. But about 10 years ago, I was driving down the road, and all of a sudden, out of my mouth came, well, you couldn't have been so bad. How would you know which lesser student to cheat from? And I didn't even know to what extent I'd been carrying that thought around with me for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just, like, gushed out, and I didn't even know I was thinking about it. And there was one other thing that I wanted to say, because we tend to, in this society, because it is so racist and so sexist and so anti-Semitic, you know, something in the core of the society won't let that go, that we end up encouraging people to be so dismissive of it. In my mother's case, when she had an aneurysm and went to the hospital, you know, thank goodness for the staff, they treat the patient in front of them. And they may never have seen you in life, but they go to work and they say, saved her life, which they did. But then she was like, all of a sudden, she was huge. I mean, she was like 250 pounds, and I kept saying there's something very wrong. But in their minds, a 70-year-old black woman is supposed to be a big, fat woman. And so they kept treating her that way afterwards and acting as though there was nothing wrong until it finally dawned on me to bring a photograph of her before the incident into the hospital, at which point they said, oh, my God, and they suddenly swung into action. She was about 125 pounds overweight from the steroids that they had her on, and they ended up endangering her life that they had just saved. Because of this stereotype of what it means to be an African-American woman of a certain age. And I think, you know, I wanted to share both things because we end up being a little bit too dismissive of the role that racism and sexism and all these isms, really the damage that they do, and act as though the person who receives it is just supposed to let it roll. And it doesn't roll. Sometimes it does endanger our lives.
It does indeed. Hey, Janice, thanks for both stories, and thank you for the call. It meant a lot to me that you did. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Mona in Bern. Okay, Mona, you're on.
Hi. I just want to tell you how home health aides are stereotyped. I work for community hospice, which I love my job. And we are in the trenches with the people that we care for. But yet, if somebody asks you what you do, a lot of people will say, I do nursing or something to avoid saying that they're home health aide.
And what are the stereotypes, Mona?
That they don't have enough ambition to go on to nursing school, or, you know, you want to work in a nursing home and get away with, you know, not what I hear about people who talk about home health aides in nursing homes, that they don't do anything, they hide in the lunchroom. You hear all these.
How do you handle it, Mona, when they do that to you?
Well, I like to say that I care for the sick and dying. Mm-hmm. Because people respect that.
I see.
So,
but if
know,
somebody says to you,
better.
But if somebody offends you, I mean, this is, I think, one of the most important things about the program today. If somebody offends you and says something to you that is really obnoxious, what do you do about it? Do you fight back? Do you say, hey, wait a second now, you know, this isn't right?
I think that I would say to them, and I have said to them, well, we all get old someday, and we're all going to need somebody to take care of us someday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that you want somebody kind and loving to do it, you know.
Can you remember a single story that you could relate to us? Because I'd like those, because I think they really tell it all. That happened to you?
Yes. I was taking care of a lady. I was washing her feet, like Mother Teresa.
Sure.
And she said, why don't you do something with your life, my dear? Mm. And I said, well, I am. I'm taking care of you.
And
but she just thought that I was wasting my life away. And I think it's a wonderfully honorable job that I just love.
You're terrific. Thank you so much for calling, Mona. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Let's go to Herman in Pittsfield. Herman.
Yes, hi.
Hey.
I have a double story, if you don't mind. I'll try to make it quick, all right?
Right.
I was in the jewelry district in New York for many, many years. I moved up to Pittsfield.
Right.
And story number one. In the Diamond District, there are a lot of jewelers, okay?
Sure.
People walking in. And as soon as a person of color would walk in, or a Latino would walk in, and maybe not dressed appropriately, whatever that's called, whatever that means, you hear all the showcases go click, click, click. Everyone would close it down.
Mm.
But ironically, the biggest thieves were white, were Caucasians. So that tells you something. Second story is a personal one, where I was selling a piece of jewelry to somebody, and the first thing, after about an hour, we were in a conversation, and she said, well, you people are good at this. Now, it's very interesting. I listened to the comment of another gentleman. You asked him, why didn't you say something? And I always ask myself this question.
Yeah.
I'm confronted this way, even as a kid.
It's not easy. Yeah.
Like, you feel, well, this, I don't know if it's guilt, or it's like, do I have a right to say something, or what will happen if I do say something? But I learned a lesson from it, because I ended up with a reputation within the diamond industry on that block that with Herman, you don't tell racist jokes because Herman doesn't like racist jokes. Herman doesn't go for this kind
of thing. It's interesting. You know, my father was also named Herman, now that you mentioned it, and he spent a lot of time in the Diamond District. He ran a watch company called the Harmon Watch Company.
Uh-huh.
And he would take us down, his boys, down to the district, and he was just like you. I mean, let anybody use the N-word or anything else, he blew his cork.
Oh, I blew my cork. Blew my cork. Especially when the first Obama election was taking place.
Right.
Very quick story.
Yeah.
There was this this cartoon going around the block, and in the cartoon, everyone thought this was a joke. This was funny. In the cartoon was a shoeshine boy who happened to be of color, but with they put Obama's face on him, and he thought this was a joke. And my reaction was, are you out of your mind? It's not funny. This is racist. But they didn't see it that way. And these are the Hasidim. These are people of morality, of people who have a sense of ethics. I didn't see it.
Okay.
All I saw was racism. And these people should be ashamed of themselves, because most of these people were Holocaust survivors.
Well, of course, you may be doing some of the same thing yourself now, because, you know, not all Hasidim are bad.
Well, No.
Yes.
That's true. Let me clarify that. Not all Hasidim are bad, but some of the Hasidim, and I'm sorry if I'm utilizing the word, but some of the Hasidim that I met that I had a bad experience with were racist.
Yeah, but some people of color are racist. Some Hispanics are racist. Some Jews are racist. I mean, you know, we've all got a part of ourselves.
How do you react to it? Do you say something?
I do.
You say, like, I should have told this woman when she said, you people, I should have said, what do you mean by you people?
Yeah, but the problem, of course, is, should have said.
have said. You could have said.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have heard people tell that story in which I've heard the story in the beginning, and it was, you should have said, I could have said, and then it was, I said. They changed it to I said. But Herman, I really loved your call, and I thank you so much for making it.
I enjoy your program.
Thanks, Herman. Bye-bye. Okay, and so now we'll go to Anne Marie in Orange County. All right. Anne Marie, you're on.
Hello?
Hi, Anne Marie, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about something that happened to my son when he was in first grade.
Great.
He was in the school system here at Monroe Woodbury, and he had a teacher. Let me back up for a second. Our family is half Irish, half Moroccan, so we have an unusual last name.
Yep.
So his teacher, I guess, had a problem with him in first grade. It might have been that he was too chatty or something, but he came home crying one day and told me that his teacher had put a box over his head. So I had to go into school the next day, leave work, go into school, find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. The minute I approached the teacher and told her who I was, she, you know, her body language changed, her arms crossed.
Sure.
And her response to me was, I put all the Mexican children in boxes.
What does that mean?
Right? I know. That's what I said. I'm like, what are you talking about? First of all, that doesn't even make sense. Secondly, I don't understand what you're trying to achieve. So I went and spoke with the principal and complained about it, and the teacher stayed the entire year because we had another problem on St. Patrick's Day, you know, around that time when all the kids had to raise their hand if they were Irish, and she literally called him a liar. This is first grade. This is a first grader. So
you know,
she retired at the end of the year. But.
You know, Anne-Marie, it's such an interesting story because when it's us, it's one thing. But it's when our kids, when it's our kids, you know, I remember one time one of our kids got on the bus and somebody called him a dirty Jew. And we knew who it was. And I don't think the kid even knew it, but you wonder where they pick it up from.
Yeah.
And I called the father, who's twice as big as me. And I said, you got to do something about this or we're going to have to tangle, I said to the guy on the phone. So, which is pretty funny because he could have tangled me with one finger. but when it's your kids, you know, you can get really, really riled and upset.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
especially when the school didn't do anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, you know, all right.
Well,
it was horrible.
One wonders whether, how long ago was that?
It was a while ago.
Yeah.
He's 25 now.
Yes.
So it was
one wonders whether that kind of thing gets changed. Thanks, Anne Marie. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks.
Bye. Let's go to Jimmy and Ginny in Connecticut. Ginny, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yes. I'm calling about a blonde, dumb blonde stereotype.
Okay.
Are
you blonde?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I was born blonde, and throughout high school, this is back in the 80s, right around when they had Chrissy and Three's Company. When I was growing up, I had a hard time. I wasn't taken seriously. People would laugh at me when I'd make mistakes. And, you know, so the way how people perceived me affected the way how I perceived myself.
Of course.
And I had to battle with that growing up through my 20s. Then finally, once I got into my 30s, I finally come to terms with the fact that I am intelligent. And so I just wanted to bring that up.
No, but you make a great point.
Yeah?
When you think about it, not only about the thing, the, you know, the dumb blonde syndrome,
yeah.
But you also make a great point about what it does to us, what it makes us feel like when it is done to us. To what degree do we absorb that kind of stuff in terms of our own self-respect or the way we see ourselves? And I think that's a very profound point that you're making.
Yes, well, thank you. Yeah,
well,
thank you.
Thanks, Ginny. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Alan. Yeah. Thanks.
Let's go to, let's see, Jim in Albany. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Good.
Hey, the New York Yankees get their name from the old Indian word for the Dutch. You know, it's related to the word Yonkers now.
Yeah.
Alan, are they Dutch players on the Yankees today?
I don't know.
The Redskins, of course, is a tribute to Jim Thorpe. He won 3 gold medals in 1912.
But I'm asking you a question. Is it appropriate to have the name the Redskins?
Well, if we take pride in our Indian heritage, which we used to do, yes.
Are you Indian?
Well, we're all part Indian.
My mother told me
we were part Dutch because we're born in Albany.
No, the question is, are you an Indian? And therefore, if it was the New York Jews or the New York blacks or whatever else, would you feel offended by that? And I think that one can make the argument about this, but I just think, if you think about it for a while, it's indefensible. I do.
Well, it all depends on whether you take pride in your sports heritage and your history.
Okay, Jim, you've had the last word on that.
Thanks, Alan.
I appreciate it. Yep,
okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes to Mashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, and Classroom in the Wild, helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. MashokanCenter.org. The Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, featuring an 18-hole golf course, restaurants, Hudson River views, and getaway and golf packages. TheGarrison.com. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm. SnowFarm.org. And Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examination, classic eyewear, contact lens fitting in historic Uptown Kingston, participating with MVP, Empire, Davis, VSP, Medicare, and other insurances. CohenOptometry.com.
You know, I love the individual stories about what happened to you. I know there are classes of stories, but I really like to hear about something that happened to you that has affected you, a story. So it's important to discuss this in philosophical or anthroposophical terms, but I'm sort of interested in just the raw stuff. But anyway, you can talk about anything you want on this program. I just think as long as it's within the proper respect. We heard from Zeb in Albany, New York, who remembers the Woody Allen film. Annie Hall, and people taking offense at what they think they heard as opposed to what they did hear. Anyway, let's go to Michaela in Lenox. Michaela, always great to hear from you. You're on. Michaela.
Yes. Hello.
You're on.
Okay. Hi.
Hi, neighbor.
I want to share my story. It's about my husband, actually. He is from Egypt, and his religious beliefs are Islam. They believe in Islam. And here it's been very difficult to find a job for him because his name is Mohammed.
Sure.
So the first thing they do is when they see his name in applications, they won't hire him.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people come to me and they ask me if I am mistreated, if my husband beats me up, or if he forced me to wear a headscarf. And it's really sad that I see it as ignorance because, people really don't know about these things. But it's hurtful. And it's sad to see that my husband every day is asked if he has something to do with terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wish things were different.
Do you have a story that in which somebody, a specific person, did something that you considered to be really unfair?
It is really unfair. And I'm also from South America.
Yes.
And I came to this country when I was 12, and I can't get rid of my accent. So
does that work against you, do you think?
Yes, I think so, because, I go to college here. But I noticed that in school, I am white, so people, when I open my mouth, they say, "Oh, where are you from?" They cannot believe I'm from South America because I'm blonde and I have light eyes. It's really sad. And they think that because of your accent, you're ignorant, you're not capable, you're kind of stupid. So it hurts.
Where do you go to college?
I go to Berkshire Community College.
Ah, it's a terrific place, a wonderful place.
Yes, I'm in the nursing program.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations on that. I do recognize what you're saying about people of the Muslim faith, who really are. There's no question under a certain amount of watch. We read about it in the airports. We read about it in the way people are looked at. There was a piece in the Times this morning about a guy who goes through every time and every single time he's searched and patted down. So yes, I hear you, and I wouldn't want to be in that spot myself. And I appreciate your calling very much. Thanks, Michaela.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah. And I love your show.
Great. Thank you. Let's go to Phyllis in Rhinebeck. Phyllis in Rhinebeck, you're on.
Okay.
Yep, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
My story has to do with the old-fashioned advertising in the New York Times when they said help wanted male and help wanted female.
Uh-huh.
And then in small print they would say this is just for guidance that you could apply for either sex. So at the time I applied for a listing that was under male. And it was for a really nice non-teaching faculty job at Princeton.
Oh.
And it turned out, I was called in for an interview, and it turned out that the person hiring was a woman who had a doctorate from the London School of Economics, a very bright lady. And it turned out she really was looking for a woman. But they, I think since it sounded like a really good job, they put it under help wanted male. So this is one of these stories where, you know, something worked out a little differently, but in both of our cases, I think we were just very lucky people. So many women really don't have the opportunities that men do simply because they've got the name of a woman. So, you know, this is one that worked out a little bit differently.
Now, I'm sorry, I may not be following, and maybe that's only because it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but you're not saying that Phyllis is a male name? Or are you?
No, I'm saying it's a female name.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, most of the time when a woman applies for a job,
sure,
she doesn't get the same kind of reaction that a man does,
mm-hmm.
which is why a lot of women are, you know, using only their initials. A lot of parents are giving their daughters names like Leslie, things that are, you know,
right.
You can't tell one from the other, because there's still a great deal of discrimination against females.
Yeah.
But in this case, back then, I just happened to be lucky. I applied for this even though it said help wanted male. And it turned out that they were looking, the woman in charge of this office was looking for it.
Have you ever thought it might have just been a clerical error?
No, no. Okay. I think that whoever was putting the ads together said, well, this is a good job. It must be for men.
I get you. Phyllis, thank you for the call. That's very,
okay.
Very interesting. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Michael in Claverick. Okay, Michael, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. First-time caller.
That's great.
Interesting topic. The thing that's interesting about it for me is that I used to tell this story about being discriminated against because it was entirely out of my realm of experience until it fell into my realm of experience, which is sort of the point that, you know, why this is a good topic. This took place, first of all, I have a very Irish-sounding last name. It's an Irish last name. My mother's Jewish. My father's white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And I've always, from the time I was a little kid, self-identified as a Jew. Not observant. I wasn't raised in any kind of denominational faith, but there you go. I mean, that could be a topic for another show because it's... I feel Jewish. I've always felt Jewish. I relate to other Jews.
And theoretically, because of the way in which Jewish lineage comes down, you are Jewish.
Yeah, technically. Right, technically.
Yeah, you're right, right.
So, you know, that being said, this is what happened. I ended up going to the I grew up in New York, and I had never been in the rest of the country until I was 18 years old, and I went out to Chicago at the university there. This is in the south side of Chicago.
Yep.
And this is my freshman, you know, I'm 18 years old. I'm having breakfast at the big table there, and this guy is looking at me in profile, 2 seats away from me, and he's saying my last name over and over out loud, saying, you know, you look like a Yid. But you don't sound like, but you don't have the name of one. And he was going on and on about it because he was talking about my profile because I have my mother's nose, which is, you know, the thing that's appalling about this story to me is that he nailed it. I mean, he was right. He totally profiled me.
Well, their use of the word yid was hardly appropriate.
That was horrible, but the story doesn't end there.
Yes.
It turns out he was an active member of the Nazi Party, which had a base out there in Chicago. And in 1978 was the year they marched on Skokie.
Sure.
So I took it upon, after having had this happen to me, I mean, this happened to me in a place where I least expected it, which was really very strange because this was the last place in the world I expected.
So this was overt anti-Semitism. This wasn't fooling around stuff. This wasn't somebody makes a stupid remark and doesn't even realize what they're saying. This guy knew what he was talking about.
This guy knew what he was talking about, and he got me, which made me feel really strange, I got to tell you, because I...
But what did it do to you? Did it reinforce your sense of Jewishness, or what did it do?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And moreover, it brought out a kind of racism in me that I didn't know was there.
How so?
What I did was I generalized from that one experience. Yeah. I felt this is what's happening in the Midwest of our country. I took this one incident of this one guy.
Yeah, you could have met him in Brooklyn or Manhattan. You're exactly right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, the really shocking part of the story for me isn't that there was this jerk saying this stupid thing. It was more like that one comment brought out a kind of bile in me that then applied to a group.
Yeah,
and discrimination against groups is really the subject of your show. I mean,
and it's what happens in some societies, which ends up in big bloodshed.
Right. Always bad.
Hey, Michael, thank you. I want to try to get to some other people. Appreciate
it.
Yeah.
Sure. Bye.
All right. Let's go to John.
John
in Glenn. Okay, John, you're on.
Hey, Alex, quick story for you.
Okay.
I was born in 1984. And, wait a minute, Alan, I didn't turn on
the radio. You broke the rule. Hey, where is the radio?
Here.
Okay.
No, Alan, I had a completely dead sound on the... You still there?
Yeah, we're here, but you got to follow the rules, you know what I mean? Go ahead.
Alan, when the Godfather movie came out, I was at a business meeting with people I knew, and making all of us, including me, making supposedly clever Italian comments. Finally, fellows who is Italian-American said, hey, do you guys know what's black and blue and rolls on the floor? We said, no, what? He said, that next guy that makes an anti-Italian comment.
That's funny. That is really funny. Yeah.
And one which growing up in World War II and listening to the news, whatnot, I had gotten used to calling Japanese people Japs without realizing that it was a derogatory comment.
Yep. You and everybody else. That's correct.
And finally, I said to one woman who lived on top of a hill outside of Beacon, I said to her, is that a racial slur? And she said, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I won't use it anymore.
And I know exactly who that woman was. So,
okay, that,
so interesting, interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, John, thank you so much for that great call. Appreciate it.
Bye.
And now on to Beth in Niskayuna. Okay, Beth, you're on.
Okay, I'll be quick. On several occasions in the past, I've got light brown hair and slightly olive complexion. Okay. But my father's Native American and Persian, and he looks it. And on several occasions in the past, it had never occurred to me that this would be anything at all, right?
Because
he's my dad. I've had people, when they meet him, do that cartoon double take, eyes bug open, mouth drop. I mean, it had never ever occurred to me that that would be anything at all. And sometimes one of the people was extremely educated. He'd made a joke, oh, I can figure out who your father is, and he pointed to this blonde-haired man. I guess he'd never seen a woman who dyes, lightens her hair. And then when I said, no, that's not my father, this is my father, I have never, it was just like one out of those cartoons. But what I think is the worst thing, Alan, is that football game between Amsterdam and I think Gelderland, where they were yelling Amsterico.
Interesting.
That was bad, and they should have, the winning team, Amsterdam wasn't even winning. That's what's very troubling, and they should have made Gelderland forfeit the game. They're lucky that didn't start a riot. That was, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, of course, sure.
Yeah. There's not enough. You cannot apologize for that. Maybe if Amsterdam was winning, maybe, but they were losing.
Yeah.
And
well,
they should have forfeited the game. The winning team or whoever oversees high school football should have, because that will cause a riot. They are very lucky that didn't cause a riot.
It certainly could. Hey, Beth, I want to move on, give everybody a chance. Thanks an awful lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yep. Okay. Let's go to Mike in Glenville. Okay, Mike. Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
You're on.
Yep. Okay.
You're on.
Hi. Hi, Alan.
Hey. What do you got for us? Bring it.
An interesting story. I'm a real estate appraiser.
Yep.
And I was down in Rockland County working on a project.
Yep.
And I stumbled into this small town. I had no idea where I was. I mean, I knew where I was, but I didn't know the makeup of the town. And when I went into, I believe it was the assessor's office or a realtor's office, I really was approached by several people, looked me up and down, and asked me what my last name was. My last name ends with a vowel. And at that time, I'm figuring they realized I was not a Jew. And they basically said, we can't help you, and please leave our town.
Uh-huh.
And I've never, you know, I'm a white male, and I really never have felt that feeling before, and it really gave me a real solid feeling about, you know, what persecution must feel like.
Sure.
And with that, I also said to myself, you know, that the persecution that the Jewish people have gone through, really, it took me a little bit back, because I said, they're kind of doing that to me now.
Yeah, but I'll tell you the truth, Mike. I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about. You know, I'm Jewish. It would not occur to me to ever talk to anybody like that in my whole life. So what we can't do is to say, you know, all Jews are that way. You know, look, we had relatives who perished in the Holocaust. No two ways about it. And believe me, there's nobody more sensitive, for example, than my wife or than me or than my children on this stuff. So I think the what we have to watch out for is our stereotyping about everybody, because we experienced one group of people in one small town. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I was brought up on Long Island in a very Jewish community.
Yeah,
most of my friends are Jewish.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have most of my really longtime friends are Jewish. It was just this one community that really threw me back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about. Hey, Mike, we thank you so much for being with us and for telling us the story, and call again, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, bye. 1-800-348-2551, but you'll have to call that tomorrow because we're out of time. Now, I just want you to know, we apologize to those who didn't get on, and there are three of them, Michael and Rob and Larry, and we're sorry to all of you, and we hope that you'll call again. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com and Reform Pilates Studios, Saratoga Springs, teaching Romana's Pilates, providing a fully equipped studio with Gratz apparatus, private and small group classes, reformyourbody.com, the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenewyorkstate.org, and Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry, riverbendanimal.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wmc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the remarkable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our web assistant is Tom Job. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. And everybody, thank you for calling today. I thought it was a great show.